I'm going to be giving our talk for our session today. And as Arv mentioned, we're moving along in this cycle of dependent origination. And this month, the subject is becoming. Now, if you thought that craving was uncomfortable and that clinging was painful, well, you ain't seen nothing yet. Because with becoming, we get into what is even more painful. The place where what we do and what we have and what we think and feel, all of this gets tied up with who we feel that we are. So anytime any of these things are threatened or lost, it doesn't just mean that we feel the pain of not having what we like, but it means something bad about us. If we don't get what we want, if we lose what we had, not just sadness or discomfort, but this feeling that we're somehow damaged or unworthy because we couldn't get or keep that thing that we wanted. And I think we all know the pain of having that kind of feeling. Or sometimes it can take a different turn where the loss of whatever it was we were so identified with feels so threatening that instead of blaming ourselves for not being good enough to keep it, we strike out at the people we feel were taking it away with rage and hate. And I think that also is an all too familiar thing these days, unfortunately. But just as with clinging, you know, like Twerig has talked a lot about, becoming also can be really hard for us to see. As long as we're getting what we want, doing what we want, feeling like our identity is pretty secure, it feels very natural. And even when we don't get what we want and our identity is threatened, we don't see the problem as the becoming. We see the problem as all the stuff that's happening outside. We just can't imagine it any other way. So we'll be talking about this subject, which is a pretty deep subject, for the rest of the month. And so I'm going to just get us started today. And for the first time in quite a while, I have an actual children's story to begin with, the way we used to always begin when we were together as a whole group. So a little bit of background on this story so you'll understand it. Over the past couple of years since I got my DNA done and got on Ancestry.com, I've been reconnecting with my Nordic roots. So I've gone to some different events at the Nordic Museum, virtual and in person. And through a book talk that they had, I got acquainted with the Moomin books by Tori Johansson. And I want to share a short story from one of those books today. And some of you may know these books, and if you do, you know they're really delightful. And the Moomins are a kind of fantasy creature. They look sort of like a hippopotamus. And in the book, there's a family of Moomin Papa, Moomin Mama, and their son, Moomin Troll. There are a number of other characters, their friends and neighbors. But this particular story is about the father, the Moomin Papa, when he was young. So when he was in his kind of teen age years or so, he ran away from this orphanage where he was being raised. He was deposited there as a foundling on their steps. And because, you know, being that teenage time, he felt like he wanted to get out and see the world. So in the course of this journey, he meets three new friends, Hodgkins, who was an inventor, and the Muddler, Hodgkins' nephew, who liked to collect things and had a huge button collection that he was always sorting. And then there was the Jockster, who was a sort of a wandering free spirit, didn't want to be tied down to anything. And when the Moomin met them, Hodgkins has just built this very fancy boat, the Ocean Oxtra, and the Moomin and his three new friends set off on a voyage of adventure. And that's where our story starts. And I'm going to share just a picture of them here so you can get a sense of what they look like. So can you see it? Okay, good. So this, the jockster is the one in this hat. The Moomin is this hippopotamus-like thing. Hodgkins is sitting next to him with these thingies on his ears. And then the Muddler is the one with the saucepan on his head. So that's what they kind of look like. So I'll go ahead and read the story. Right across the ocean plowed the ocean oxtra, trailing her lonely wake. One day after another went bobbing by, each as sunny and sleepy and blue as the next. Schools of sea spooks crossed our course. This is being told by the Moomin Papa, and appeared in our wake. Trails of mermaids appeared in our wake. We fed them oatmeal. Sometimes when night drew closer over the sea, I liked to take over from Hodgkins at the helm. The moonlit deck that slowly rose and fell before me, the silence and the restless waves and clouds and the solemn circle of the horizon. Everything gave me the nice, exciting feeling of being terribly important and terribly small at the same time. Perhaps, however, more the former, being important, that is. Sometimes I could see the jockster's pipe aglow in the dark when he came paddling astern and sat down beside me. You'll have to admit that it's fun to do nothing at all, he said one night, and knocked the ashes from his pipe against the railing. Nothing at all, I asked. I'm steering, and you're smoking. Wherever you're steering us, said the jockster. That's quite another matter, I replied, because even then I had a logical mind. We were talking about doing things, not about what things we're doing. Have you had any forebodings yet? Earlier, the jockster had this kind of foreboding that something bad would happen, and it did. Are you having any forebodings again? I added. No, the jockster yawned. Puff, puff, it's all the same to me where we go. All places are all right. Good night, see you tomorrow. Cheerio, I replied. When Hodgkins relieved me at dawn, I mentioned in passing the jockster's strange and total lack of interest in his surroundings. Well, said Hodgkins, perhaps he really is interested in everything, only he doesn't overdo it. For ourselves, there is always one single interest. You want to become. I want to do. My nephew wants to have. But the jockster just lives. Simply lives, I said. Anybody can do that. Hodgkins said. Then he disappeared into his usual silence and a notebook in which he drew curious mechanical constructions that resembled cobwebs and bats. Anyway, I think the jockster's attitude a bit careless. I mean, just to be living. Living is what you do anyway, isn't it? As I understand the question, you are surrounded all the time by lots of important things to be experienced or pondered over or conquered. There are so many possibilities that one's neck bristles rise when one tries to imagine them all. And in the midst of it, I am sitting. And that's the really important thing, of course. In the midst of it, I am sitting, and that's the really important thing, of course. Now, when I read that, I thought, oh, wow, what a perfect description of becoming. All of these things to be experienced and all these possibilities, but the important thing is me in the midst of it all, me in the midst, our topic for this month of becoming. So when we consider what Hodgkins says in the story about himself and his friends, we can get a pretty good picture of what goes on in this process of craving and clinging and becoming, and maybe also get an idea of a little something about being a little bit more free of quite so much becoming. Now, when Hodgkins describes himself and his friends, he says, for ourselves, That is, for himself, the muddler, and the moomin, there's always one single interest. You, the moomin, want to become. I want to do. My nephew wants to have. But the jockster just lives. So the moomin wants to become. And, you know, if you read these books, you'll see that he really is a poster child for becoming. He's very much wrapped up in his ideas of himself. He wants to be able to think of himself as a great adventurer and a highly talented, very special creature. And in fact, when he grows up and has a family, which they talk about in most of the other books, he causes the rest of his family quite a bit of discomfort, really, with all of his efforts to prove that he's still an adventurer like he was when he was young, or to live up to his ideas of being the ideal husband and father who's always in charge of everything. And, you know, you can imagine how the rest of the family felt about him always wanting to be in charge. So if you get the distinction in the way the moomin is thinking, it's like he's not just excited about having all these adventures and doing new things. What he's really excited about is the idea of himself as a person who has adventures and does fabulous things. And as long as he feels like he's fitting this ideal, well, then everything is fine and his life is happy. But when he isn't sure he really fits this picture, well, there's a lot of suffering for him and for everybody around him. He's all caught up. Who am I? What am I? Am I enough? Those are his obsessions. And with him, becoming is right there, front and center. The Muddler and Hodgkins are a little different. With the muddler, what we see first is this craving, phenomenon of craving. He's always thinking about his collections and about the next new thing he can add to them, all about acquiring stuff. So he gets his identity from what he has. Now, Hodgkins, he's all wrapped up in his projects, his inventions, and he gets his idea, his identity from what he does. Neither of them is necessarily spending a whole lot of time going around thinking, oh, I'm a great inventor, I'm a great collector, or secretly worrying, am I really a great inventor? Am I really a great collector? The way that the moomin does. In other words, they're not so much aware or caught up in this process of becoming. But I'm pretty sure if for some reason they were not able to invent or not able to collect and do these things that are so important to them, they would feel really confused and they would just not know what on earth to do with themselves. So that identification is there. It's just a little bit deeper and under the surface. If we think about our own ways of relating to our experience, I think we can probably see some elements of the muddler and of Hodgkins and of the moomin in us too. You know, we do get some sense of identity often from our possessions, maybe including even our body and, you know, the way it looks or what it can do or its healthiness. And we certainly get a sense of identity from what we do. I mean, maybe that's the most important in our modern world. From our work, from our roles in society, from the roles we play in our family. That's a big part of our identity. And then too, like the moomin, we sometimes get caught up in our ideas of how we should be, how we would like to be, whether we really are what we are projecting to be, and find ourselves always trying to get to that sort of ideal me. Now, the jockster, he's something a little bit different from all of them even, and maybe an alternative to all this craving and clinging and identifying and becoming. And if you read the books, you know, I think that I don't know that I would exactly call him an enlightened being, but he does have a different approach to things. And maybe it's a good alternative that we can relate to a little bit ourselves. Now, the Mumin thinks that he's just too careless and indifferent to his surroundings, but Hodgkins doesn't agree. And he says, maybe he's really interested in everything, only he doesn't overdo it. And that's not really such a bad description of an attitude of mindfulness or a mind state of equanimity. Interested in everything, but not overdoing it. Not grabbing on, not pushing away. And while others want some special thing to become, to do, to have, the jogster doesn't really want any one thing in particular. He just enjoys whatever comes his way. He has things to do. He has roles to play in the adventures that he and his friends go on. But there's a sense that he takes those roles pretty lightly. As Hodgkins says, the jogster just lives. Now, Mumin says, well, big deal. Anybody can do that. But you can see from Hodgkin's reaction that he doesn't really agree. He isn't so sure about that, that maybe being able to just live is actually quite a special thing. And I think we all realized, too, that it is quite a special thing to not be caught up in craving or clinging or becoming, to simply be with whatever is occurring really is a very special thing. And I think all of us touch this place from time to time in our meditation practice. We all find at least, you know, small momentary times where we feel a relief from that burden of craving and clinging and becoming, when we're just with the feeling of our breath, or there's a sense of equanimity. We're not trying to get anything different. So how do we move more fully into that place where we're interested in everything but don't overdo it, and we can just live freely without this burden of so much clinging, craving, and becoming? Now, in the coming weeks, Susan and Lauren will be talking a lot more about becoming, and maybe also about being not quite so caught up in becoming. But I'll give you a few thoughts as a preview just to get started. First, I think it's important to say, and I'm pretty sure you will hear this throughout this month as well, that being completely free from becoming is a pretty high bar. We can't just hear a talk about becoming and dependent origination and say, well, okay, becoming, not good. I'm not going to become anymore. I think you all know that it really doesn't work like that. It doesn't work with craving. It doesn't work with clinging. It doesn't work with becoming either. We can't just say, oh, okay, buff, I'm not going to do that. It's too ingrained in us. It's too natural of a process, and it's even too hard to recognize a lot of times. So this kind of doing not quite so much of this becoming, or holding the becoming more lightly, is something that happens much more gradually through seeing and understanding the teachings for ourselves, through practice, sometimes happening in ways that we barely even recognize until one day we kind of notice that certain things are not such a big deal anymore. And I think that the most important thing in this freeing of ourselves from so much becoming is the deepening of our understanding of anatta, or not self. Of the three characteristics, this might be the most important one for becoming. And as we begin to see this a little bit more clearly and see that this thing I call me really isn't quite so solid and so stable and so permanent and so personal after all, with that we become freer of this identification and becoming. And that's something we see you know, when we notice the changeability of our body, we notice, as Arv was mentioning in the meditation, the way that our thoughts and emotions just arise and pass through, not so much can exactly hold on to and keep. And even though seeing this and really seeing this truth of anatta often seems like it's a strange and difficult thing, harder than seeing impermanence and harder than seeing dukkha, I think most of us have some inkling of it, even though we don't really fully understand it or are willing to confront it completely. Even the Mooman might know more than he thinks, because after all, why would he be so concerned and so obsessed with becoming, if on some level he wasn't afraid that he really wasn't all that he would like to believe that he is, not as solid as he would like to think he is. Now, of course, in his case, he thinks that if he isn't that ideal me, it's because there's something wrong with him and he needs to fix it, which often that's the way we respond. What he doesn't realize is that none of us is that solid ideal me, and none of us can fix it because it's just not the way things are. And when we start to get some inkling of that, even though we still have these feelings of identification and ownership and of a solid and stable me, we know that that isn't quite the whole story. It isn't really quite the way things are. And then we can have a little bit of freedom and we can take our roles and identities a little bit more lightly. So every little thing doesn't have to be something that means something big and momentous and wonderful or terrible about us. Now, of course, as I mentioned before, very few people ever really get completely free of identification and becoming. But in for most of us, there's always that sense of this is me. But we can come to understand that it isn't the whole story, and cling to this sense of me and this sense of identity a little less tightly. Being more interested in everything, not overdoing it, just living. So let's have a short pause, sit for just a moment. Just being with what is. Not overdoing it with anything. Thank you for your attention and for your practice. And now we have some time for some discussion groups, maybe like 15 minutes or so, I think would be good. And for your discussion, you can consider the characters in this story and maybe think a little bit about where you see yourself and find yourself forming your identity, possessions, activities, daydreams of who you could be, you know, maybe all of them. I think probably a lot of us have some of all of them. And then maybe reflect a bit on what it means to you to be more free of that, like the jokester is, interested in everything, but not overdoing it and just living. So that's the topic for discussion. I'll break you into your rooms. and have a nice conversation, and I'll bring us back together in about 15 minutes.
Linda, what was the line from the story about the guy who just lived his life but like didn't make a big deal out of it? What was the big deal? What was the line from the story that he didn't?
You know, he was interested in everything. Let me make sure I get it right here.
Because it's such a good.
I know it's really a good description. He's interested in everything, only he doesn't overdo it. Yeah. I liked that too.
Yeah, I just loved that.
Mm-hmm. They're such a, well, it looks like everybody is back now, so we can go ahead and, you know, have some questions and discussion. These characters are really amazing. I was quite surprised when I found this story that fits so well with this topic in this book.
Perfect.
A kid's book. But you know, a lot of the stuff here, it's good for kids, but she gets pretty deep sometimes. They're very interesting books.
What's the name of the author?
Toby Johnson. Jansson, I guess. J-A-N-S-S-O-N.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you search for Moomin, M-O-O-M-I-N.
Oh, you find it.
A bunch of stuff comes up.
Tons of
story
stuff.
And others.
Good. Yeah, they have comic books. They have socks. They have mugs. They're very popular, really.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Okay, anybody has a comment or a question, you can just unmute yourself and ask, or if you want to, you know, it looks like that people can just do that, I think. Maybe raise your hand to let me know.
Hi, Linda, it's Susan.
Hi.
I'm remembering something from childhood, just realizing so many things that I was attached to. Like I had Paul McCartney and John Lennon on my walls. I think it was when I was a teenager. And hopefully my internet is stable enough. And I was to marry them. I was certain I would marry one of
How
them.
How funny.
Especially Gary. Well into my, it's not funny. It carried well into my maybe 30s or 40s. And when Paul McCartney went to first place books at Lake Forest Park, I went. I still had this in me. I was scared. I thought it was all about me. And when he had a children's book he had written, I don't remember the name of it. And when I went up to him and I had that one-on-one, it was like my ordinariness just appeared and the whole thing fell apart. It died. Mm-hmm. And I was just a human standing there, and I didn't understand what I was feeling really, but I just remember that death. It was a loss of this identity that I had claimed for so long. Mm-hmm. And, It was actually a good thing because it culminated kind of a fantasy that it ended. It wasn't real. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of clinging, folks.
Quite poignant, really.
Yeah.
Oh, Sus.
Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. There's more.
Yeah.
Save it for next week.
Those. So many have those. Yeah, kind of fantasy and things.
Someone in my group, I thought it was really helpful to say that sometimes we have an identity we didn't even know we had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which, I mean, some of them are really obvious and in your face. And then there are others that are like sneaky, like what you were saying of it's hard to know sometimes how much we've identified with who we are, levels of energy, the physical ability to do stuff, or just how we want to be seen in the world. And we're pretty oblivious, I think, a lot. Sometimes oblivious until it's gone. And then we go, oh my goodness, I was so attached. There was not a question there. I was just sharing from our group.
Yeah, but that's really seems to be true. And it, as you were talking, it occurred to me that a lot of times when, as you say, when there's not, when that thing feels very stable and secure, you know, like things like our health, and we just kind of take it for granted, we don't even notice we're identified. And it's sort of interesting, like with the Moomin, the times when all this question about identity comes up is often when we really want to be this thing, but we're not so sure that we are. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a huge thing.
Yeah,
it's interesting. And yet, well, it's becoming a huge thing. I don't think the person that's going through that huge thing would ever say, oh, well, I'm having a problem here because I'm so identified. I mean, you just don't see it. Mm-hmm. Even then, you don't see it in that same way. It's like with craving. You don't see that the problem is in the wanting itself. The problem is that you don't have the thing.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same thing with becoming. The problem is that you're not that ideal person.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have something that I've been thinking, and it has to do with the comparing. Mm-hmm. And I have found that, and I read recently, really quickly, an article about research about the fact that human beings compare, and that society kind of it's a survival thing, that comparing us, it keeps the group together. And so I have found that my identities often have to do with comparing myself to others and wanting to be able to fit in the fear of being actually kicked out of the group. Like there's this underlying fear that I won't fit. I won't be good enough. My identity will be shameful and I will be kicked out. And it's very, very deep fear that keeps me, you know, grasping and building up that identity so that I fit in. And I know that, comparing, I think, is one of the last things that's abandoned when we awaken. So I just think it's kind of a fascinating process.
Yeah, it is a fascinating process. And that idea that you brought up, Lauren, about this identity being really tied to a feeling of security and survival with the group, I mean, that really brings home to me how instinctive that is, because for human beings, we need to have the group to survive.
Yeah,
it is important. And I think, you know, so many of us go through times during childhood or adolescence where we feel like we don't fit in, and all of that angst about being with the group or the in group or the out group. It gets carried over to adulthood too. So yeah, thank you for bringing that aspect up. That's a big part of it, I think, that drives this.
You know, you said one more, but that touches on, if you've not seen The Social Dilemma, how it's that times a jillion when it comes to social media, because, you know, so many people commenting on you. And especially with young people and how they're developing socially, and all these little clicks and likes, and if you don't get them and why, it's a really disturbing documentary.
Oh, it's a documentary. What's it called?
The Social Dilemma on Netflix.
Right now. Okay.
That would be interesting to see.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine that pressure, you know, being in my age group. It was bad enough when I was young. I think probably this is a good time to turn it over to Arv for our closing. But thanks so much to everybody for being here and for your interesting comments and sharing.
Yeah.
Very much enjoyed spending the morning with you. So thank you.
Thank you, Lindell.
You're welcome.
Yeah, a lot of heartfelt commentary too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Lastly, a note on Dana. We invite you to offer Dana or generosity to the teacher today or to Sims. Dana to teachers and to Sims can be made by going to the donation tab on the homepage of the Sims website. And just a note that Sims and its teachers do freely offer the teachings. For the teachers, this would support their livelihood. This is their livelihood. At the same time, acknowledging that these are difficult times, and we may feel that there are other things calling our attention and a need for our resources, including our own selves. So just to acknowledge all of that. All right. I'd like to end today with an offering of metta, or loving kindness. And I'll ring one bell at the end. May we be safe, healthy, and live with ease. May we fully awaken. May all beings be safe, healthy, and live with ease. And may all beings fully awaken.